evening.
Hello, good evening.
Sana, do you want to start or do you want to wait?
Oh, you can start.
Okay.
I mean,
I am
it's up to you.
I understand. I'm expecting somebody new today, so.
Well, do you want to wipe in? Like,
let's wait a minute or so, but not too long.
Okay. I have to tell you, when I wrote my notes yesterday to put the new section and the title and the page, I read the first verse. I don't usually do that. And so I went in the living room and I had Tony read it. I said, I want you to see what we did.
That's Barbara.
Barbara, this is Hannah is on the line with us as well, and welcome. I know this is your first time to the class, so if you're in front of a computer, I'll show you where the handout is.
Okay.
And if not, you want to take some notes on how to get there for the next time.
Malka.
Good evening,
okay.
Malka. So this is the 4:30 class. Is a deep Zohar class, and we started with the first verse in Genesis in the Zohar, and we're approaching the end of Lech Lecha, which will probably be about 6 more months before we finish it. But if you go to the Revealed to the Hashem webpage and click on the Revealed Wisdom page,
okay.
Then scroll down to the matrix, to the green and white lines.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first row, the right-hand column, is a link to all of the parashas of the Zohar.
Oh, okay.
And if you go down to, scroll that down to Lech Lecha, it'll open up to a landing page, and we're in section 33, starting it today. The first pasuk we do is 346. And I will be starting with a L'shem Yehud, which you may be unfamiliar with, because I don't think Chabad does L'shem Yehud. But
okay.
I'll explain that another time. Go ahead.
So I'm scrolling down to which one?
Lech Lecha. It's the third one on the down, so it's not far. And it's section 33. I'm not sure which page you're on.
I'm looking at the classes.
Oh,
but on the right
okay.
hand.
On the right hand column, in the first row.
These are past classes.
Right, and they're handouts for the classes as well. So
okay,
the right hand, the first row, the right hand column, it says, what does it say? Give me a second.
I've got other subjects, and then Zohar recordings,
right.
And then why Kabbalah now? And then,
no,
oh,
the
Rabbi.
You want to click on Zohar recordings.
Oh, okay.
When that opens up, scroll down about an inch, and you'll see Parasha Lech Lecha.
Okay.
And then when that opens up, scroll down to where you see section 33.
Okay, I'm there. Wow, I've got some catching up to do. Okay.
Great. Hello, I missed her name. You want to say welcome? What is her name again?
Her name is Barbara, and she's from now on she'll speak for herself.
Okay. I won't have
Thank
any
you.
Trouble remembering your name, believe me.
Thank you. I'm horrible with names.
Okay,
my given
so,
Barbara, so that's why I'll remember you.
Starting now. L'shem l'chud kudsha b'richu ishkinte b'tchilu urchimu utchilu utchilu urchimu L'yakta l'shem yudhe b'vavhe b'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael Limud Torah mitzvah L'asok Torah mitzvah Vayhino am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kunene aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kunenehu. Pasuk 346. V'tachaze b'kol inun d'kudiyuknin d'nishmatin d'alma kaho zivugin zivugin kameya Levatar kad atyan lehai alma kudsha b'richu mezazug zivugain amar rabbi Yitzhak kudsha b'richu amar bat peluni livloni. The translation, come and see. All the souls that are destined to come to the world appear before him as couples, which means that each soul is divided to a male and female. Afterwards, as they arrive in this world, the Holy One, blessed be he, matches them together. Rabbi Yitzhak said, the Holy One, blessed be he, says the daughter of so-and-so to so-and-so. My commentary, with Rabbi Ashlag's comments, this pasuk is clear as written. And just for Barbara to explain that to you, when you see capital letters in the English translation, that's Rabbi Ashlag's commentary. The regular letters is a translation of the Aramaic. We read the Aramaic primarily for energy purposes. Questions, comments, thoughts is the way I start or finish the introduction of each verse. So does anybody have any thoughts or comments or questions they want to ask about this verse?
Well, it was new to me. Even though I knew it was Hashem who puts us together, and we had a soulmate, but I did not know that we came before Hashem together. I thought that was really lovely. And like I was telling you, when I first came on and there was no one, when I was writing the title for my notes today, I read the first paragraph there, and so I ran into the living room and had Tony read it. I said, look what we did. And we didn't even know it. But now we know.
Well, let me express something, because it's really two different parts to this verse.
Right.
So in heaven, we're standing before Hashem, and he splits the soul, male and female. So we have female has a soulmate that's male, and a male has a soulmate that's female. But the second part of the discussion is Hashem is announcing the marriages. And the marriages do not necessarily have to be your soulmate. So the verse appears like it's saying something similar, but it really isn't.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
The female soul chooses to come down or not, correct? So when the soul appears to Hashem, they come together. Are they like they're in unity, but he splits the soul? So I'm a little, since the female decides if she's coming down or not, she does not have to come down with the male, correct? So when the soul
Malka. The female's choice is whether to come down or not. But she will never come down by herself.
Right. Right.
And let me explain that. Yes, she does come down by herself, usually from anywhere from 1 or 2 years after the male is born, will the female be born. Up to 20 years, or actually up to 40 years difference it can be, between the when the male comes down and when the female comes down. But what happens is a soul, which means male and female in unity, a soul approaches Hashem. He then splits them, and now they are standing side by side in front of Hashem.
Okay.
Then she is given the choice of whether to come down or not. And her decision will be based on what she perceives of that lifetime. If she comes down, the life will be like this. She doesn't come down, his life will be like that. And so she makes her decision at that point. Is it a little clearer now, Malka?
Well, if you could just expunge a bit on the 20 years, 40 years, could you explain that a little deeper? She could stay up for 20 years or 40 years before she comes down.
If you read the Torah, it's that the Torah says that Rivka was 3 years old when she was brought to Sarah's tent, and Isaac was 37 years old when he had the binding, when he was involved with the binding. So right there you have at least 34 years as a difference. Jacob was 84, but he was over 80 years old when he married Rachel. And she was, the Midrash says she was like 20. So that would be like 60 years, but that's a little bit, their lifetime was 100, and Jacob lived 150 years roughly, 107. So, but according to the Ari's writings, there can be a significant difference in the, when a male comes down or when a female comes down. Now, in our generation, there are Kabbalists who are saying that it is possible for the female to come prior to the male a couple of years. But that's not coming from what the people that we recognize in our current generation, having been from the sages from the past. It was always thought of as the male would come first, the female would come up from 1 or 2 years after, to 40 years after. Now remember, when the male and female split, the female has already been cleansed completely from her last lifetime, because she made a choice to come down. Each time she has to make that same choice of whether to come or to not come down. So the process is, in Gehinnom, in hell, she is cleansed completely of all physicality. So now when they come back together and they're unified, he's coming down because he has a tikkun to do. She's coming down to assist him in that tikkun. But in order for there to be affinity, attraction between male and female in the physical world, they have to be relatively close spiritually. That relatively close spiritually means that she is accepting upon herself part of his tikkun, but it's never exactly half, because she is coming down higher spiritually than the male. Any questions or comments or thoughts at this point?
Well, I'm wondering about multiple marriages, but I kind of think maybe it's a little bit early to ask that, you know, as we get more into the section.
Well, essentially, multiple marriages mean that whether it's the male or the female, they did not marry their soulmate. And now the second marriage means that they will have the merit to marry their soulmate. And in the advanced reincarnation classes, we've discussed how if they now have the merit, they can get divorced, which is a mitzvah, or they can, God forbid, the male that the woman is married to has to die, because if she doesn't divorce, then she's not able to marry her soulmate. And the revelation of light that is associated with a marriage of soulmates is tremendous. So the system is set up that either they will divorce so that she can marry her soulmate, or God forbid, he has to die. And that's the story of King David and Bathsheba and her husband, the Hittite, where King David had sent him into the front of the battle in order to, well, that's what he did. He sent him into the front of the battle, and he died there because he was unwilling to divorce her. And in God's mercy, he perceived that the Hittite would feel such pain in seeing his ex-wife married to King David. He would not be able to be happy for her or for King David. He would just feel his own desire to receive for oneself alone, and therefore that pain would have been too much to bear. And so he was taken out through death rather than divorce by his choice. And all of this information comes from various forms of Midrash, whether written in the Zohar or in other Midrashim.
Tony told me today when he went to the grocery store, he saw one of his fellow workers from years ago, and he said he was 85 now, and that his first wife died, he remarried, his second wife died, and he remarried, that he's on his third marriage. Does that mean that possibly the third one is his soulmate?
Very possibly. Mm-hmm. Or it could be that they're marrying for companionship on a physical level. That's what they feel. Or it could be that it's a soulmate. Remember, if there is intimacy between a man and a woman when the woman is past childbearing age, they are creating new souls. They are creating souls through that intimacy. So there, it may be that they need to create these souls if that's part of their tikkun.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we don't see the whole picture. We're lucky to see even a portion of it. But put it on the other way, if you had described that the woman had married and her husband died, and then she remarried and the second husband died, under Jewish law, she would be unable to marry a third time.
Oh.
She's described as the black widow, because that would be an indication that her first husband that died was her soulmate. And that when he deposited the sperm within her, it's also a deposit of a spiritual sperm. And that sperm remains within her. And when her second marriage took place, the first husband, her soulmate, was fighting with the second husband and defeated it, and that was the cause of the second husband dying.
I knew there was the fighting, but I didn't know that would be the cause of the husband dying, the second husband. So.
Well, remember, this cause is always spiritual. I mean, he could be dying from a heart attack or from cancer, God forbid, or just a car accident. But the real cause is spiritual. And the conflict between the two essences of souls, of sperm, that is what's creating that physical effect. Barbara, now I think you can understand why we call this the deeper Zohar class.
Yes, I'm contemplating all of this. Am I on mute, or did you hear me?
I didn't hear who was first, so whoever was first, continue to speak. Go ahead.
It wasn't me, so.
I just wondered if I was on mute or if you could hear me.
If you want to be on mute, you press *6. It'll put you on mute, okay. And you can unmute by pressing *6 again. So,
okay.
But the way this class works is everyone is it's interactive. Everyone is able to talk freely, and everybody works together with their thoughts and questions. And we strive to come to some deeper understandings of the spiritual laws that are being expressed in each Zohar, in each verse of the Zohar.
This is very interesting.
At least that's what I always remember. The word interesting is a Chinese curse. But yes, it is interesting.
It's a Chinese curse.
Yeah, may you live in interesting times. Would you really want to live in interesting times?
Yeah.
It's a new one for me. I'm learning a lot of new things today.
Well, whenever the class is composed of different people, you get different energies, and it draws different information.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I never know what I'm saying. It's what you are drawing through me.
So is there any specific intuitive something that happens so that you recognize your soulmate?
According to the writings of the Ari, there are 5 signs of a true soulmate. And if I remember them, and I'll walk through them, you have complementary astrology, so that your sun sign and their sun sign is complementary, like water and earth, air and fire, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is that one of you will have to cross an ocean. But that's a metaphor. It could be that you grew up right next to each other and they were your neighbors and you knew yourself since you're 3 years old, but you never thought of that person as a possible mate. They were always there, and you played together as children, and then you went through that period where the boys and the girls don't want to have anything to do with anybody with the other side, and then you get into puberty, but you never thought of them that way. They were always just your neighbor, so that's mm-hmm. considered an ocean, even though there's no water, and it's always just two neighbors. Or it could be that your soulmate is in China and you're going to be, doing business in China when you meet. But the second step is that you'll cross an ocean. And the other 3, I can't remember off the top of my head. The last one I remember always, but I always save it for the last one because it's, you'll never know if it's your soulmate until after you marry, because that's the 5th sign.
Huh. That makes things a little difficult.
Well, I'll explain it to you quickly, because my caregiver is going to be coming shortly, so we'll call the class. But if I can explain, the 5th sign is, as when you announce the marriage, the parents are, or the family is horrible. They want nothing to do with that person. They constantly try and keep you apart and break you up, and your marriage is, they're fighting all the time not to have this marriage. And as soon as the marriage takes place, all of that rancor disappears and calms down, and everything is really good. And every day your marriage grows stronger. That's the 5th sign of a soulmate. So you really don't know if your marriage is a soulmate marriage until after you marry.
Okay.
And spend 40 or 50 years together.
Or 60.
And the other couple of signs, if I remember them, I'll mention them another time. I'm sure over the course of this section we'll be discussing this. And my caregiver is here, so it's time for the class. I have to call the class, and
okay.
I'll just remind you that the 7 o'clock class tonight, which is West Coast time, is a Tikkuni Zohar class.
Okay,
and I bid you all shalom gadol. And one more quick announcement. Tomorrow at 11 a.m. West Coast time is the brand new Jewish history class, if you're able to join us.
Huh.
Shalom to all. Shalom gadol.
Thank you.
Shalom. Thank you.